Welcome to this episode of On the Case, the LSC Law Society's podcast. I'm your host, Mia Ching. In each episode, we speak to various professionals and experts to gain insight into legal careers, law school, and other exciting developments in the world of law. Without further ado, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of LSC's On the Case. Today, we are incredibly lucky to have Axe Carano with us. Axe is currently a final year law student at Queen Mary University of London. He is not only product lead at the Corporate Law Academy, but has also secured a training contract with Latham & Watkins. First of all, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Axe.
Thank you for having me. I love the podcast. Really, really glad to be here. Love all of the guests and very honored to be one myself.
Thanks so much. Before we get onto your work experience, insights into the application process, and general tips, I think we'll just begin with something very simple. So Latham & Watkins, the firm that you're going to train at, is a commercial law firm. Now, in plain simple terms for our listeners, what is commercial law and what is a commercial law firm?
There's a lot of words that get thrown around, commercial law, corporate law, and it's important to sort of draw the distinction between all of these terms. So commercial law is advising corporations and companies, not individuals, on all sorts of legal matters that they may face. So when you think of commercial law, you should think of any and all sort of legal functions. So for example, you may hear of things like intellectual property, real estate, litigation, which is dispute resolution. Suppose I was a massive hotel chain and I was trying to buy up another establishment worth 100 million. I would need a real estate lawyer to help facilitate that transaction, figuring out how to finance it, purchase the land. Real estate lawyers are a type of commercial lawyer. And similarly, if I was a pharmaceutical company and I was creating a vaccine, I may want to have intellectual property lawyers to secure patents to protect my creation. Intellectual property lawyers are a type of commercial law lawyer. So commercial law is this umbrella term to encapsulate all different types of lawyers that advise corporations. And a subset of that, which is not the same as commercial law, is corporate law. Corporate law deals with facilitating the expansion and growth of companies and corporations. So let's go back to the previous example. If I was a hotel chain and I was trying to expand my business inorganically, I may want to buy an existing set of hotels in Paris if I was in London, and I may want to buy that entire business. I would then bring in corporate lawyers to acquire that hotel chain, and this would be known as an acquisition, and you may want to bring in a merger and acquisition lawyer. That is corporate law. So a commercial law firm is a firm that offers these sorts of legal services from all of these different legal angles, be it real estate, dispute resolution, intellectual property, corporate, employment, labor, the list goes on and on.
Great. So that was a really, really good explanation. And it would have been useful for me to know in the beginning of my studies at LSE, because personally, I had never really heard of commercial law until the first few months of my first year at university. So was it the same for you? When did you first become aware of the world of commercial law?
I do believe that there's no traditional route into a career in law because everyone comes from a different background. But if there is one, I definitely did not have that. A year before I started my law degree, I was considering and thinking about getting into technology. So becoming potentially a computer scientist and doing a computer science degree, building products and companies. But then I thought about the actual academic discipline that I wanted to get into, and I realized that my skill sets and the requirements in that profession, it just wasn't the strongest match. And so I came into law school thinking, well, I am interested in the law as a subject and potentially interested in being a lawyer, but I didn't really know what lawyers in the city of London did. I had an impression that law was all about litigation and dispute resolution because that's what you see on TV. And so I spent the entirety of my first year trying to figure out what lawyers really, really do. We may sort of get into this in the next question, but I spent a lot of time going to open days, networking events, organizing my own networking calls, trying to figure out what that meant. And by the time I'd entered my second year, I started to have like a more comprehensive understanding of what actual commercial law is.
Speaking of your open days then, you attended Insight Days at a lot of different firms. How did you sort of distinguish between these law firms? Because we often hear the differences about US and also UK law firms. So how do you think these types of law firms differ from one another, and sort of figure out which ones you were really attracted to?
I think from the outside looking in, especially when you start your legal journey, all of these law firms look quite similar. They have different colors, different names, and people call them different things like US firm, Magic Circle firm, Silver Circle firm, all these cool creative words that people have made up. But they're all sort of law firms essentially offering similar services. And so when I came into law school, not only did I not understand what lawyers did, I couldn't sort of differentiate between each of these firms. What I did was I realized in my first year, I really need to figure out what makes all of these firms different if I want to make the decision to join one of them. I spent all of my first year and my second year trying to attend as many events as possible. I went to quite a few Insight days. I did a first year scheme at Latham & Watkins. I tried to figure out, based on a certain set of criteria, what makes each firm different. So for example, I would think about what are these firms really known for in terms of their practice areas, what sectors they operate in, where are they actually placed on the globe? Are they only in the UK? Are they in Europe? Do they have a US presence? And what is their area of expertise? What is their culture? How many people are in their firm? How do they actually go about training their lawyers? So I set those criteria and I evaluate each firm on each of these criteria and try to figure out what actually makes them different. And I think that's sort of the way you're figuring out what the differences between each firm is. Now, you hear the term US law firm, and I struggle with that term because it is such a wide range of firms. You see some firms which are a lot smaller, their headcount is under 100, and they're originated in the US and have an office in the UK, but it's not as large as, say, the Magic Circle firms, which are originally from the UK and have spread across the globe. And then we have firms like Latham, which have been around for around, like, I think 20 years in London. The headcount is really large. Each of our practices are really sophisticated, and our London work is largely self-contained. And within that spectrum, you have a lot of other firms where the trainee cohort lawyers can be between 5 to 15. And what I would say is that some of the core differences between the US firms and UK firms is, one is just their international position. US firms have a large presence in the United States. That is particularly important because 50 cents to the dollar on the legal industry is spent in America. And if you have access to that, you have access to double what the other firms have access to. Culturally, you will see emphasis on higher responsibility, an emphasis on proactivity, because these firms often have smaller headcounts and work in leaner teams. You may also see them knowing their area of expertise, having a set of strengths, which they really focus on and hone in on.
So that was a really, really comprehensive distinction between these different types of firms. You're definitely right. In the beginning, they all look similar. So it really helps having to figure out which aspects of a law firm that differ from one another that really distinguish them. Speaking of careers and also work, you have a very distinct pattern in the type of work experience you've undertaken. You have worked at 5 fintech companies in the Middle East. Unfortunately, we can't go into the detail of these, as I'm sure it could take an hour for each company. Listeners, if you're interested, check out Axe's LinkedIn, where he's listed all these incredible companies. But let's start with what fintech is. Could you give a brief explanation of fintech?
Sure. Fintech is short for financial technology. It's the use of technology to integrate it within the traditional financial system. So if you think of banks and try to picture what that may look like 20 years ago, with no technology, transaction costs were really high. It would take a long time to transfer money from one person to another. International payments were really difficult. And now you use your phone and you have Apple Pay or Google Pay, and you tap your phone and the money is magically transferred from one place to another. You have PayPal, where the transaction costs are really efficient. You often rarely even use cash nowadays. Everything revolves around the use of tech. That is fintech. You're using technology to facilitate financial transactions. The area of fintech that I worked in very briefly was blockchain technology, which was a specific technology believing that if you eliminate the system, such as banks and governments, you could create a more democratic financial system.
In regard to the startups that you worked at, why did you seek out fintech companies in particular? And what was it about the industry that drew you to them?
When I was working with these startups. It was the hottest technology trend at that time. We often now talk about AI as the most exciting technological invention. Before AI had sort of gained that level of popularity, blockchain was at the front and center. It was quite simple, really. I wanted work experience. I looked into myself and thought about what are my unique strengths and how do I get experience that would speak to my legal strengths, but also sort of play on what I'm actually good at. I realized I understand technology better than most law students, and I understand the law better than most people in technology. I had recently relocated to Dubai, which was one of the leading jurisdictions for blockchain and crypto work. A lot of new startups were there. I saw an opportunity where these entrepreneurs would be highly risk-taking and willing to give me a ridiculous amount of responsibility. They were working using UK law, and there weren't too many people who had a UK law degree. I wanted responsibility, and I wanted to be able to do some legal work. So I helped out with transactions, I helped with fundraisers, I helped with IP work, and I just built up this set of experiences that could prove that I have this understanding of how legal work works. And it would also sort of convince me that I wasn't necessarily interested in a career in tech. It sort of did both of those things in one shot for me.
What did you learn from your time at these companies that you think really helped when you applied to law firms?
The most important thing I learned was I don't want to start my career as a tech entrepreneur. This applies to figuring out what firms you like. It's often a process of elimination. If you were interested in different firms, you try to reduce that list down to a smaller set of firms. And the same way, it made me understand what technology is and what a career would look like if I was the founder of the company. But it also let me do the legal work and figure out what lawyers actually do in-house and similarly in practice. And I think what helped in applying to law firms was I also realized that I really like getting a high level of responsibility early on in my career. And so applying to a place like Latham would just be perfect for me because I would have that level of responsibility where I can seek out as much work as I can really take on. And I needed an environment that would facilitate that. So it helped me identify what I actually wanted from life.
That's a really, really good way of trying to figure out what you want to do in the future, especially when you talked about it's a process of sort of elimination. I think that will be a lot of comfort to students. I know a lot of people who did law quite like you because their skill set matched it. It wasn't necessarily that they had deep-seated interests. So really getting to know what you want out of a law firm evidently made you successful in your applications because you ended up doing vacation schemes at both Baker McKenzie and Latham & Watkins. Why did you ultimately decide to accept a training contract with Latham? What was it about the firm that stood out to you personally?
It is a massive process of elimination and figuring out. It took me my first year, my second year applying and trying to figure out where I want to be. Latham was an instant fit. If I'm trying to explain one selling point as to why I would choose Latham over any other place, it's because I think Latham is the perfect middle ground where I personally had to make no sacrifices. If you look into Latham, you know that we've historically been the first or the second biggest law firm by revenue, by a long shot, and we do some really cool deals, which are really, really interesting. But you want to figure out what training at a law firm will do for your actual career progression. When I compare Latham to any other US firm I could have gone to, it offers a certain set of things that other US firms may not offer for me. For example, Latham has more breadth of strengths. It's just great across the board. It's great at corporate, but it's also great at finance. And when it's good at finance, it's good at borrower side and lender side finance. It's good at arbitration, and it's good at some other niche practice areas like fintech, like data technology transactions. That level of breadth is not often seen in the US because they tend to hone in on certain strengths, like we talked about earlier, that may just be about transactions. The effect of having a lot of strengths means that if you have 4 seats during your training contract, each seat will be individually brilliant, no matter what I choose to do eventually. In terms of other US firms, there was a strong sense of high responsibility and proactivity. But compared to firms with a much smaller intake, there's also a fair bit of structure and mentorship within that training. I think it's important to get structure within your training to make sure you understand the law that you're actually practicing. And it's important to have mentors that make sure that you become the best possible lawyer you can be. And sometimes that's sacrificed when you have a really small cohort. But then when you compare Latham to other UK firms, the emphasis on responsibility is far, far greater. Given the fact that we have 32 trainees and a lot of them are on secondment, the ownership of work you have, the amount of responsibility you get, the opportunity to push limits and become the best person you can be is significantly higher. It's naturally entrepreneurial because US firms came to the UK fairly recently and everyone has that drive. It's also particularly good at what I'm interested in, which is often transactional work and potentially corporate work. We'll see where we actually go, but it is really, really good at some of the things that I really care about. It's also a firm where I could join that firm and I would be very happy to spend the rest of my legal career with opportunities that some other firms don't have. A lot of people join the magic circle and join UK firms and intend to join the US eventually. But Latham lets you train at a brilliant firm and stay at the best possible firm. So I would never have to make any sacrifices. Some of those things were lacking in the other firms I'd applied to and the other scheme I did, but Latham was just the perfect sort of middle ground and just wouldn't make me sacrifice any of my priorities. And that's something you just don't really see very often.
I think the fact that you said that you could really see yourself spending the rest of your legal career at Latham is such a major selling point, because it's very common for lawyers, trainees, associates to sort of jump around firms. And I remember that I did talk to somebody from Latham before, and they did say that they referred to something called like the Latham boomerang, which was whenever a trainee or a lawyer at the firm, they decided to go to another firm, they would always come back to Latham because they thought it was such a brilliant firm. So that's really, really helpful. Speaking of your career, getting a training contract is every aspiring commercial lawyer's dream. So now we're going to talk about some application tips from an expert like yourself to hopefully help our listeners as application season starts. What are some things you did in your application process that you think made you successful?
Before we get into some more specific tips, there were a couple of things that I did that made me more likely to succeed. I'm quite a competitive person, so I viewed my training contract journey as a competition against the people who were also applying. And I did a couple of things. So I outfailed my competition. Increase your odds of success is to increase the rate at which you fail. If you fail 30% of the times and succeed 70% of the times, fail more often so you succeed more often. So in my first year, I applied to loads of firms. I applied to probably 10 or 11 different schemes apart from the inside days I did. And I probably got 2 or 3. I did assessment centers. I had a back scheme assessment center in my first year with Clifford Chance. And I didn't do all that well. I took a lot of feedback and I outfailed my competition. I was failing more often than the others, but that also meant I was applying more often than the others. And I had collected information about my shortfalls more than other people did. In terms of networking, I reached out to quite literally hundreds of people and many of them wouldn't get back to me. I didn't take that as a no, I just reached out to more people and somebody said yes, and I'd take their time and learn. And then I think I outworked and tried to outlast my competition as well. I spent a year trying to build a confidence and a level of sort of conviction within myself where I wouldn't accept a plan B. Latham was where I wanted to go. I built a circle of friends that would make sure that I kept going throughout my process. I came up with a game plan of very specific actions I would take to get that training contract in my first shot. And when you have a strategy, you try to fail more often than your competition, you try to outwork your competition and you outlast your competition, you will succeed. In terms of more specific things that I would say is, apart from coming in with the right mindset, it is about having a strategy and having a game plan about how you're going to go about your application cycle, viewing it as a couple of stages. Stage one is the written application process, thinking about everything you can do in this 3 to 4 month interval to maximize your odds of success. How many places do you apply to? When do you apply to these places? How much time should you spend on each application? What can you do to make your applications better? Thinking about all of those things in terms of your interviews. What can you do to become more commercially aware? How can you practice to make your interview technique better? What feedback did you have in the past that you can learn from and get better at? I think it's coming in with the right strategy and executing on it. And I'm happy to go into more detail in the future.
Yeah, so that was really great. I think a lot of people will be reassured to hear that failing more is not a bad thing. It actually helps build your strategy because, well, I know personally, and I know a lot of other people, they think it's a bit impossible because they keep getting rejections, and that could be really, really discouraging. But what you said about failing more often means that you succeed more often is really true. And I think that's really helpful and motivating for a lot of people. On the flip side of that, what are some things that you found challenging during the application process, and how did you cope with that?
The application process itself is difficult and there's a lot to learn, but I think the actual sort of life challenge I was facing because of the application process was this feeling of imposter syndrome and sort of not feeling like I deserve to be where I am. And that really hurt my performance, because if you don't believe you're worth what you are worth, you won't put that across on your application where you're trying to sell yourself, and you won't present yourself in an interview as well as possible. It took me a long time of sort of building my confidence and understanding what imposter syndrome actually is. And my understanding of it now is that your perception of what other people think you are is a little bit higher than what you actually are. So to make that more simple, I mean, you feel that the world thinks you're a lot better and you're really, really great and you're doing all these incredible things. But you personally feel that you're not actually that person. That could be either because you think people are judging you in a way that is not justified, or your confidence is a lot lower. And you need to sort of reduce that gap as much as possible. Make yourself feel like the person you think the world thinks you are. Creating sort of unshakable evidence to prove to myself that I am who I am. I started this practice where I have like a jar of notes of every time I had a small success. I have it right next to me and it says, I just did my first assessment center. I just got my first offer. I just did my first VAC scheme. I just did my first panel. Now I'm going to put in, I just did my first podcast. And I now have this really big jar of all of these incredible things that prove that I am who I say I am. And it's evidence that I'm not an imposter and I deserve to be where I am. And that is the cure to imposter syndrome. And I recommend the book, The Imposter Cure and The Light We Carry by Michelle Obama, which were some of the things I read during that time that really helped me get over that.
That's really, really good advice and really relatable, I'm sure, to a lot of people, especially, like you said, the competition for commercial law firms is extremely high. It's extremely competitive. And often when people get to certain stages, they can feel as if they don't really deserve it because they think there's so many other people who are better than me. And I appreciate you putting podcast episode into your jar of achievements. With this theme of helping students navigate commercial law firms and the application process, you're product lead at the Corporate Law Academy. Now, I'm sure a lot of students have seen this website and their fantastic forums, but just in case they haven't, and even if they have, could you give a brief overview of what TCLA does and is, and your role there?
Yeah, definitely. I feel a lot of people who are further along in their process have somehow encountered the Corporate Law Academy or TCLA, but quite simply, TCLA is an online school where we're sort of teaching professional skills. We're trying to bridge information gap between the university process, which is law school, and the working world where you actually become a commercial lawyer. And we want to make sure that no matter what an individual's background is, no matter where they come from, what exposure they've had, that their circumstances never prevent their success in the working world. In commercial law, you have interviews where you're discussing mergers and acquisitions and all of these big corporate concepts, but you've never studied merger and acquisition law, and you've never had an economics class in law school. You're often in your second year and you don't know how to go about these things, and you need to resort to external resources. It sounds unfair, but you need to build that information for yourself. And what we do at TCLA is we have some really incredible courses. I used them throughout my first and second year, and it's one of the few resources that got me my training contract. We have a lot of very useful services, some of which I help with operating. We have application review services where we review applications really comprehensively and try to help any candidate get better. We offer mock interviews where we interview candidates and build on their strengths. It's really fulfilling to hear back from these candidates and say, well, oh, I got the offer, or oh, my application went to the next stage. And it's just an incredible opportunity to help people. I help operate some of the products, like the application review service and speaking to candidates. And it's quite fulfilling and full circle to go from an applicant using these services to now join the team and try to help people in that process.
I mean, TCLA is a genuinely incredible resource. Personally, I've been browsing its forums a lot. So what you're doing is very helpful to law students everywhere. And finally, just to wrap up today's episode, what is something you think that every student applying to these vacation schemes or training contracts should avoid doing?
If I try to think about like applications, interviews, I have a very long list to this. It's a bit hard for me to choose just one. So I'm going to try to choose the one which happens most often. Not knowing why you want to apply to that firm or not conveying it at any stage, the application stage, the interview stage, not conveying your motivations, not conveying correctly why you want to be a lawyer, not conveying correctly why commercial law is the area you want to be, not explaining why that firm is the only possible place where you can get that. That is the biggest problem I see, and it's the problem I see most often. So ask yourself the question, when I write this application, am I explaining why this place is the only place that could offer me this opportunity? Why this point about maybe the tech that they use is so important to my professional development? And have I conveyed that point well? I think you need to spend a lot of time reflecting on your motivations and then making sure you put that across in every stage. And if you have that level of reflection, understanding of the profession, and connecting the dot between reflection of your own motivations and your understanding of the world, that's when you will really, really stand out. Most people tend to make this error, and it's something that can make you go from a good candidate to a great candidate.
A lot of people tend to not use their own motivations as a starting point. They'll sort of mold their application to whatever they think that the law firm wants to see. So yeah, that's definitely very helpful. And like you said, actually reflecting on why you want to be a commercial lawyer and why this law firm is for you really comes across genuinely in your interviews and will give you the highest chance of being successful. So yeah, thank you. That was really, really insightful. That's the end of our episode today. Congratulations, Ax, on your training contract with Latham, as well as your insights on commercial law firms and the application process. And thank you once again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of On the Case, the LSC Law Society's podcast. Further information and our contact details can be found in the description of this episode. Don't forget to follow us at LSCSU Law Soc on Instagram or on LinkedIn at LSCs on the Case. See you next time!